Here is a good example of never say never. Yesterday on the program, what did I say about Christmas lights? Yesterday on the program, I said something. Don't you remember? You're the producer. You're supposed to hang on my every word. What did I say about Christmas lights?
You had to allow me to pick up my microphone from the floor.
Okay. Well, you might want to keep it near your mouth someplace. It usually does. You know, I don't
listen. That's not a good strategy.
All right. What did I say about Christmas lights?
You said you'll never put up outdoor Christmas lights.
That's right. I said I never have.
Yeah.
And I never will. Guess what my wife announced this morning before
I left? You're putting up Christmas lights.
She is.
She is?
Even though I told her, not on the house, but I told her, don't do it without me because you're going to fall off the ladder and break your neck. She's going to have my daughter hold the ladder for it. She's going to put Christmas lights or attempt to put Christmas lights on one of the trees outside. We've got a blaze maple. It's lost all its leaves. It's not a big thing. It's maybe 12 feet tall. She's going to put Christmas lights on it. Because she, like everyone else in my neighborhood, driving down the street, sees all these other houses ablaze with holiday festivity, except for our house, which is like a black hole in the neighborhood at night.
So it's just peer pressure.
I don't know if in her case, I'm not going to say it's peer pressure in her case. She's always wanted to put up Christmas lights.
Wise husband.
But I simply, what did I say?
It's peer pressure.
All right. Well, I don't know if that's true. That might be her calling.
I know Maria right doesn't listen, so that's why I'm safe.
Yeah, I can say anything I want to because she doesn't listen to the program. Now, with that said, I just think Christmas lights on the house are too much work. I don't like the idea of putting them up. I don't like the idea of taking them down. It's not that I lack in holiday spirit. I am actually known every year at Christmas Eve to turn off the lights in the house, get the tree lights going really well with some music playing in the background, and we actually dance around the Christmas tree. It's one of our family traditions. We dance around the Christmas tree in the Wilkins house on Christmas Eve. We've done it ever since the kids were little. We still do it. We require the Christmas dance around the Christmas tree. So I don't lack in holiday spirit. But there are other things. I've never put up a nativity scene outside because we don't have an outdoor nativity scene. And I kind of... Okay, no offense to anybody who has one, but the ones where they're plastic and each character kind of glows, the light-up ones. Do you have one of these? I bet you do.
No?
You just put Santa Claus up in the windows, don't you? Yeah. Well, I've never done that. Even though, when it comes to the whole issue of public displays of the nativity scene, I'm all for that. I don't care whether they have them on public grounds, but I'm all for Christians putting the nativity scene on their front yard or on their roof or wherever they want to put it. It's all fine and good with me, just as long as I don't have to be the one to set it up or take it down. That's my only position here. Okay? Now, tell me what's outside your house. Was it Thanksgiving you put up the Christmas lights?
I'm still not done. I just put lights around the, you know, gutters all the way around, and then I go around. We've got like it's a ranch with vaulted ceilings.
Yeah.
It's very dangerous, even though it's a ranch.
Right.
And I'm scared of heights. And we do this couple strings. I do a couple strings going atop, you know, on the top of the roof.
No.
Going across. Oh, yeah.
Okay. That's okay.
Oh, yeah.
And then
we have two dormers, one with a moving Santa Claus and a Mrs. Claus waving.
A mechanized Santa and wife.
Yes.
And then...
That's it. I mean, that's it on the outside.
You're sure?
I'm positive.
Candy canes?
No candy canes.
No candy canes. All right. Okay. And your nativity scene is, what's that?
This could be my wife calling
right
now.
I know. Your nativity scene is inside the house, I assume?
Yes.
All right. We put up our nativity scene under the Christmas tree inside the house because it's one of these little affairs. And then I think we have a couple other nativity scenes as well. We're going to be hearing a story from Fox News called The War on Christmas about the display of a nativity scene. A woman wants one in the public school because they allow other holiday displays. So here's a couple questions I got for you before we listen to this story. And I want you to respond. It's audio open lines for this last 40 minutes of the program. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Do you care about public displays? I'm not talking about what you put up at your house. But I am talking about what goes on the lawn of the public library or in the entryway to the public elementary school. Do you care about public displays of the nativity scene or other Christian symbols of the holidays at all? And what do you think about some municipalities who are happy to display a nativity scene on the grounds of the city hall? But they won't put up a cross. Regardless of the season. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Give me your thoughts on what is called the war on Christmas. Christians, you can turn on Christian radio anytime you want, and you'll hear some Christian, the closer you get to Christmas, they'll be whining. Even though they may say that Christmas is a pagan holiday that should never be celebrated by Christians, they're still whining that the nativity scene isn't out during that season. And that is apparently prima facie evidence that there is a war on Christians and a war on Christmas. I don't know if I buy that. And I just can't get my blood pressure up about the failure of civil authorities to put up a nativity scene in a public place. What about you? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or email us here in this last 40 minutes of Issues Etc. Issues ETC at KFUO.org. Here's the story on the war on Christmas from Fox News.
For 5 years, Andrea Skouros has been fighting to get nativity scenes into her son's public schools for the holidays. But the courts have ruled against her. Now Skouros and her Christian supporters are seeking review in the U.S. Supreme Court.
This is discriminatory, and we want to get this resolved once and for all.
The schools at issue in New York City allow Jewish menorahs and Islam's Star and Crescent and even say yes to Christmas trees. But they say a creche goes too far because it's purely religious with no secular meaning.
A symbol that is pervasively religious gives the appearance that it's an endorsement by the school of one religion over the other.
But Skouros argues a menorah is just as religious as a creche. She says Christians are getting a raw deal.
Felt like it's only fair if they're going to display the menorah, which is a religious symbol, that they also display the nativity scene instead of just snowmen and stockings and Christmas trees.
The Second Circuit agreed with Skouros that all of these symbols are religious. Still, it ruled against her, finding the Constitution does not necessarily demand that the schools employ a religious symbol for every religion's holiday. In other words, it's fine to display religious symbols for one faith and secular symbols for another. Skouros and her supporters say that's unfair.
I think the Supreme Court's going to look at this. They're going to see viewpoint discrimination. They're going to say you're giving preferential treatment of one religion or maybe two religions over another. I mean, this is rather absurd.
It was only last year that the Supreme Court decided two Ten Commandments cases upholding one public display and striking down another. Legal experts say since so little time has passed since then, the court may be reluctant to take this case, which raises somewhat similar issues. Still, the court's makeup has changed since then, and that could make all the difference here. It now has four fairly solid conservatives on it, and only four votes are needed for the court to grant review. A decision on whether the court will take this case is expected as early as Friday. In Washington, Megan Kendall, Fox News.
I'm all in favor of the Supreme Court of the United States or any court anywhere giving serious consideration to matters of religious freedom and religious tolerance. We just spent the better part of the first part of this program today talking about religious tolerance in Syria or in Turkey. Great, I'm in favor of that. But this, correct me if I'm wrong, please, I am very anxious to be corrected on this. This strikes me that the Supreme Court would take up the issue of whether or not you can put a nativity scene in a public place, or whether a parent who wants to petition to have a nativity scene put up in a public school. This seems to me, if I'm Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court, as much as in favor of religious freedom and tolerance everywhere as I am, this seems to me a trivial matter for the Supreme Court. Am I wrong? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. You know, they can only take so many cases a year. And there's a possibility they might grant this one review. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. I just want to know, do you care about public displays of the nativity scene? And why do you think some municipalities that are happy to display a nativity scene at Christmas would never be caught displaying a cross? There's another symbol for you, regardless of the season. 505-7850-1-800-730-2727. Here's my general principle, just so you know where I stand if it isn't clear already. My general principle is, if one religion is granted a privilege, or if one religion has a certain restriction on its public expression imposed, then you treat all equally. And remember, we live in a religiously plural society in the United States, as about as plural as it gets, to the point of being openly pagan. So we can't just do this for the respectable monotheists, the Christians, the Jews, the Muslims. It has to be equal access to everyone to the public spaces, or restrictions on everyone to the public spaces. Because they're sitting there saying, well, the guy from the Catholic League is saying, well, look, you can't favor Judaism and Islam over Christianity. I agree. But then he has to go farther than that. You can't favor Judaism, Christianity, and Islam over Wicca, Mormonism, the Jehovah's Witnesses. What's good for one is good for all. I think that's a good principle to live by if we're going to have genuine religious tolerance and religious freedom. I'll just toss this one in. I'm a big fan of Xmas. If we really wanted to regain the symbol of Christmas, it's not necessarily the nativity scene. That is a little picture, a little narrative of a baby being born. Lots of babies were born in first century Palestine. Maybe even a handful of them were born and laid in a manger. We don't know. Maybe so. What makes that baby unique is not that he's lying in a manger. What makes that baby unique is not that he was born in humble circumstances or in a stable. What makes that baby unique is not that he is attended by cattle and donkeys and sheep at his birth. What makes that baby unique is the cross. That's why I'm a big fan of Xmas. Because that was actually the Christian way of abbreviating Christmas. Instead of saying Christ Mass, they simply drew a cross. Back when they understood that it's not just that Jesus is the reason for the season, but that the cross is the reason Jesus came. Something that gets lost in all this fluff about the nativity scene. Well, the Republican Party is lining up, at least some of them are lining up, in anticipation of 2008, the presidential race. We're going to hear two Fox News reports, one on the GOP and their presidential hopefuls, and another on the Democratic Party and their presidential hopefuls. When we listen to this story, just listen to the list and what they say about each one of them and answer this question for me. Which of these is your favorite? Here's the story from Fox News on the GOP presidential hopefuls for 2008.
To the Politics and Eggs breakfast crowd in New Hampshire, home of the first in the nation presidential primary 13 months from now, Newt Gingrich is not really running for president because he doesn't plan to decide until next September. That's way too late for Granite Staters, even though the former Speaker of the House sounded like a candidate this morning.
This is a very, very important time in American history. I think over the next 20 years or so, we will face more challenges than at any time since the Civil War.
Several would-be GOP candidates are off to rough starts. New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani leads a new national popularity poll, and he's filed the legal papers to explore a bid. He earned favors campaigning for GOP candidates in the midterms, but in Iowa, where the first caucus takes place, up to a third of GOP caucus voters are self-described Christian conservatives. And many who respect and admire America's mayor for his 9/11 leadership have nonetheless all but declared him a presidential non-starter for his pro-choice, New York-style moderate to liberal social views. Arizona Senator John McCain has a growing national organization, replete with top Bush fundraisers and advisors, several Republican governors, and expanding operations in key early states. After burnishing a maverick image and even mocking movement and religious conservatives for years, McCain now openly courts evangelicals and hopes to sell himself to voters as the only true common-sense conservative in the race. Many are skeptical. New York Governor George Pataki has had a staffed office in Urbandale, Iowa for months. Governors, as elected executives, generally make more successful presidential candidates than legislators whose voting records can haunt them. But Pataki, a moderate East Coast Republican, is having trouble too. Three prominent Iowa conservatives have very publicly withdrawn their support for Pataki, saying in effect, he's too liberal. Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney continues to sign up influential advisors every week in New Hampshire, Iowa, and South Carolina, the first big test in the South. but with attention comes scrutiny, and he's under fire for once supporting abortion rights and now calling himself pro-life, and once courting gay and lesbian support and now vehemently opposing the legalization of gay marriage, which Massachusetts courts first approved in his state during his governorship. There are several other GOP hopefuls. California Congressman Duncan Hunter remains a virtual unknown. Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee is eyeing a bid, and along with Pataki and Romney, will gather with other Republican governors in Florida this week. Three other senators, Chuck Hagel of Nebraska, Sam Brownback of Kansas, and outgoing Republican leader Bill Frist of Tennessee, are all expected to join the race after the first of the year. Aides to Frist say he may not campaign much in New Hampshire because it's already looking to them like a two-man race between McCain and Romney. New Hampshire voters and activists say that's just ridiculous. Nothing's even close to settled. And the country has a long history of watching early frontrunners flame out just before or during the New Hampshire and Iowa tests. Just look at what happened to John McCain in 2000 and Howard Dean in 2004. In Washington, Carl Cameron, Fox News.
All right, that's one part of this report from Fox News on the GOP hopefuls for 2008. Which of those, it was a pretty long list, some of them realistic, some of them perhaps not realistic. Which of those appeals most to you? Believe it or not, the campaign's already underway. We all know, we're not ignorant about these things. We know that when a guy or a girl starts to publicly consider, what they're really doing is beginning their campaign. Now, it may fizzle out. It may burn out fast. It may not come to fruition. But when you're raising money, you're making speeches, you're putting together advisors, you're building a political machine, you're running for president. Yes, even 2 years away. So which of those might be your favorite? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, and our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. We heard about the GOP hopefuls. Here's Fox News on the Democratic hopefuls.
In just 3 days, the 2008 White House race gets its first full-blown candidate. This is historically, some might even say ridiculously early. Never before has a credible candidate launched a multi-state announcement tour fully 2 years ahead of the actual election. But that is what outgoing two-term Iowa Governor Tom Vilsack does this week. Vilsack has been on vice presidential shortlists for a decade. He's a popular Midwestern governor and a moderate. And because he's from Iowa, home of the first caucuses, he can run as a favorite son candidate and expect to do well. That could easily discourage other Democrats from competing in the first caucuses, as they were when Senator Tom Harkin ran in 1992. Vilsack's first official campaign trip starts this Thursday in the Hawkeye State. Then he goes to New Hampshire, South Carolina, and Nevada, all the first four big Democratic test states. Now, New York Senator Hillary Clinton, the former First Lady and presumptive frontrunner, could easily compete with Vilsack in Iowa, so she's not likely to be scared off. But she has not been making the kinds of calls to caucus activists, or for that matter, the movers and shakers in New Hampshire. Many of them question her electability, but at the same time, they're increasingly impatient for her to start raising money and organizing her team so they can join it. She remains the 800-pound gorilla with the clock ticking for her to signal that she's in. Illinois Senator Barack Obama is also unlikely to be chased out of Iowa by Vilsack's favorite son candidacy. The rock star of the 06 midterms has been personally reaching out for key supporters in Iowa, New Hampshire, and South Carolina. He's only a freshman in the Senate, but he's already a top-tier Democrat in the White House race. He's planning final discussions with family over the holidays and has already begun assembling staff to announce his campaign in January. Former North Carolina Senator John Edwards will visit Iowa this Wednesday on the very eve of Vilsack's big announcement. Edwards was, of course, the Democrats' second choice in 2004 and became the vice presidential running mate. Ever since then, he's been aggressively campaigning and asking Iowa and New Hampshire activists for support. Vilsack could really undermine Iowa for Edwards and cause him to rethink his strategy. A wild card is New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson. A former U.N. ambassador, congressman, and a Latino, he's yet to make any bold moves on the campaign trail, but knows how to work the media and get attention. Delaware Senator Joe Biden has repeatedly said he's running. He'll be the chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee in the new Democratic majority. When he holds Iraq hearings, many will interpret his every move as a campaign position. Indiana Senator Evan Bayh, a Democrat from a red state, who talks tough on security and has a centrist reputation. He's all but fallen off the radar recently. Connecticut Senator Chris Dodd has made no bones about his intention to run, but he too has been focused on and absorbed by the Democrats' midterm election wins and has been otherwise quiet. And then there are the blasts from the past. Al Gore could get into the race if Hillary bows out at the last minute. Former Senate Democratic leader Tom Daschle refuses to rule out a run. And, of course, there is John Kerry. But the truth is, not a lot of Democrats eager to back John Kerry after 2004, perhaps even fewer since the botched joke of the midterms. But
He continues to signal that he is running, Jim.
All right. You've heard about the GOP, the Democratic hopefuls for 2008. You lean in any direction right now with 2 years to go before the presidential elections? It's audio open lines this Wednesday, November the 29th. Let's see. You got about 15 minutes. Not counting the break. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, and our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. So if the elections were held today, this is standard question. If the elections were held today, of the list that you heard, good, bad, and ugly, who would you be voting for? Sooner or later, they're going to be asking you that question. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. You know what Charlie mentioned during the audio there? A holiday celebration that I had almost forgotten, but has always appealed to me. I mean, I might be able to put it alongside Christmas. What was it again, Charlie, that you mentioned there?
Oh, Festivus.
Festivus. That's what it is. If any of you were fans of Seinfeld, Festivus was the holiday celebrated by George Costanza's father. Remember the Festivus pole? It was just a metal pole set up in the, and then there was the airing of grievances. That was part of the Festivus celebration. I think there was also some sort of Greco-Roman wrestling involved.
Yeah,
I'm not sure.
Displays of physical strength.
Displays of physical strength and airing of grievances. Now that is a holiday. But if you've got a nativity scene at the public library, you will also have a Festivus pole. At least in my thinking, you should. And I guess based upon your lack of phone calls, you are as unmoved as I am about public displays of the nativity scene. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. You can disagree with me, by the way. Not on Festivus, but on the whole nativity scene issue. Our call-in number is 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Let's go to Phil, who calls from his car. Hi, Phil.
Hi there.
Hello.
How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty good.
Well, I'm a Pataki guy.
And why so?
Well, I think that just from sheer experience and the description of the job, there's no other elected position that's closer to the president than the governor of New York. And we've had governors in New York that have done outstanding jobs in government before. But when you have someone that has mended the fences like Pataki did when he came into the Albany 8 years ago and was able to work with the Democrats in New York City, and at that time they had fiscal crisis and he went through 9/11 and everything else, and he's done a great job in the state of New York.
Okay, real quick, Phil, before I let you go, in with only a few seconds, are you aware of where New York Governor Pataki stands on social issues like abortion, euthanasia, gay marriage?
Yeah, I think that he's a moderate Republican. And very familiar with him. Actually, I've met him on several occasions. My wife was a delegate to the Republican National Convention.
With only one second here, Phil, why not Rudy Giuliani if you're willing to go with Pataki?
I think that Giuliani has a lot of baggage, and I think that Giuliani is a little bit reckless. I think Pataki thinks out the issues well, and I think he's presidential. Giuliani's a little reckless.
All right. I mean, people have made the case before. If you can govern New York, which is one of the most populous states in the United States, or in California, you're qualified to be president. What about the rest of you? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
The cast of characters is different, but the plot is the same.
Dr. Douglas Johnson, author of our Issues, Etc. book of the month for November, The Great Jesus Debates, on how the ancient debates over the person and work of Jesus Christ are relevant today.
These things are still going on today. Some of the same questions and problems and objections that were raised back then are being raised in a more modern dress today. A lot of the issues that were raised then are relevant today, and we don't have to reinvent the wheel. We can see how some of the great Christian thinkers handle these things, and we don't have to try and start from scratch ourselves.
For more information about the Great Jesus Debates, call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, or visit our website, issuesetc.org, and look for the book, The Great Jesus Debates.
A day, isn't it like 1,000 years?
Answers with Ken Ham, popular author and Bible conference speaker with Answers in Genesis. Well, Ken, a Christian told me recently that the days of creation just can't be ordinary days because the Bible also says that a day is like 1,000 years. Did that person have a valid point?
Oh, Mark, I feel like tearing my hair out every time I hear this argument. You know, the passage that likens a day to 1,000 years is found in 2 Peter chapter 3. And in this passage, Peter is explaining that God is outside of time. The context has nothing to do with the days of creation. But that's not all. You can't use a passage from the New Testament, which was written in Greek, to determine the meaning of a word in Genesis that was written in Hebrew. The meaning of the word depends upon its context according to the rules of that language. Besides, if people were consistent, then they should reinterpret the word day everywhere else it's used in the Old Testament. So why not say that Jonah was in the big fish 3,000 years instead of 3 days? Of course, that would make nonsense of the text. No, the word day in the context of the language of Genesis chapter 1 has to mean an ordinary day.
Ken Ham would like to share more with you about the 6 literal days of creation as they're recorded in Genesis. Find out what the Bible and real science say about the true age of the earth. Look for Ken Ham's free booklet on the 6 days of creation when you go to AnswersRadio.com.
Christianity in a Pagan World, Lessons from Ancient Israel and Early Christianity, and Confessional Lutheranism in the Ecumenical World are the themes for the annual symposia at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. This year's symposia begin January 16th and end on January 19th. Now for a complete list of speakers, symposia schedule, or to register online, go to our website, issuesetc.org, or call 260-452-2241, 260-452-2241. The fellowship alone is worth the registration fee, and you can experience the Christ-centered, cross-focused worship life at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne. It's the 2006 Symposia Series, January 16th through the 19th at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne. For more information, issuesetc.org or call 260-452-2241.
Hi, I'm Phyllis Wallace. After 9/11, something changed about the way we live. The media reported job counselors advising people not about job promotions and raises, but about grief issues and trying to find more time for family and friends. It's made us want to reprioritize our lives. And to help with that, author Pam Farrell joins me, and I hope you will too, as we refocus our lives on the next Woman to Woman.
Saturday mornings at 9:30 on AM 850 KFUO.
All right, 10 more minutes of Issues Etc. this afternoon. Who's your favorite presidential hopeful in 2008? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're coming to you live this Wednesday, the 29th of November, and we're taking your answers to that question for the next 10 minutes. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Send us your email as well. We get it right here in the studio, issuesetc@kfuo.org. We got one vote from Phil for New York Governor George Pataki. What about the rest of you? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. You got 10 minutes to email us at issuesetc@kfuo.org. Don is waiting in his car. Hi, Don.
Hi, how are you today?
Doing very well.
Good. Just have a quick comment. I guess I need to do more research, but right off the top, I would say Sam Brownback, simply because I think most of the Republicans that you named there, or that were named in the thing, are actually not pro-life. So I definitely need to be pro-life. And Del Frith, if I remember right, supported the stem cell research thing, and so he's not, according to my definition, fully pro-life either.
Yeah, what Frist did, and Frist is a big question mark. I heard earlier today he's not going to run, but what Frist did was took the president's position on embryonic stem cell research, which is if the embryos have already been destroyed, let's go ahead and use their stem cells. Now, I got to wonder about, I mean, I'm John McCain is pro-life. He's got a 100% pro-life voting record, doesn't he? With National Right to Life, at least the last time I checked. Jeff, what do you know about John McCain on the pro-life issue?
Well, I looked last week. He's got 75%. That's just votes in the last year. He did not vote. He voted in favor of embryonic stem cell research.
Oh, he did. He voted in favor of what? Funding for embryonic stem cell research?
I don't know. Or I think he voted against the ban on embryonic stem cell research.
Okay.
Don't quote me on that, but it was 75%, and that was the only one that he had.
He used to be
near
100% with National Right to Life, didn't he?
He's like Orrin Hatch. I mean, he was always 100% until the stem cell, embryonic stem cell research.
Boy, that really separated the men from the boys, didn't it? That issue, it still will separate the men from the boys. Okay, let's see. I'm trying to think. Sam Brownback does, I'm confident to say, probably have the 100% rating for National Right to Life on the life issues. The question is, can he win? All right, so far we've heard from someone who's willing to say George Pataki might get his vote. Don says Sam Brownback, senator. And we've only heard from the men. What about the rest of you? And what about the women? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I know it's 2 years away, but for the next 2 years, these people are going to parade before us on Sunday morning talk shows, on radio talk shows, on television, appearances, speeches. The campaign has begun. Let's just deal with it. So if the vote were held today, who'd get your vote? GOP, Democrat, doesn't make any difference. Let's talk with Roland, who calls from his car. Hi, Roland.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing well.
Fundamentally for me, if you're wrong on the life issue, you're wrong on everything else. It sets a focus for your whole view. And if I could create a dream ticket, I would come up with probably Santorum and Talent, 1 and 2. Impressed by both. I had a chance to sit in the Senate chamber this summer and listen to Santorum talk about the federal bill to prevent minors from being taken across state lines for abortions. And believe me, this guy is what he believes.
Well, there's no doubt about Santorum. Here's the question I have for you. I guess it's just purely a political question. Santorum and Talent both were put out of office a couple weeks ago. Do you think that dream ticket of yours, Roland, could win?
Well, the dynamic this year is going to be radically different because, you know, this time around we don't have a sitting president or vice president who's running for the office. And the way politics have shifted around as to where the power bases are coming from, you know, the paradigm of the typical doesn't apply anymore. And
Roland, thank you very much. Maybe not. Let's see. Ryan's up next. He calls from his car.
Hello?
Who would you vote for and why, Ryan?
Well, I'm not sure exactly who I'm going to vote for, but I'll tell you one thing that I've been researching quite a bit lately, and, I mean, I really think it needs to get brought up again because just the fact that it has influenced every piece of legislation over the past 6 years, and that is a reinvestigation of 9/11.
All right, Ryan, thank you very much. So he doesn't know who he'd vote for, but he wants to reinvestigate 9/11. Chris calls from his car. Hi, Chris.
Hey, hi, Todd. How are you tonight?
Doing good.
Good. I am also of the position that I don't yet know who I would vote for. I just want to take issue slightly with your statement regarding Brownback of, gee, can he win, or Talent, or anybody else. I don't see scripturally that we're called to align ourselves with somebody because we think they can win or that they're more likely to get in than some Democrat that we fear. Certainly Jesus wouldn't have been a safe bet if you were making bets way back when. I think we have to vote our conscience in somebody that we can clearly, you know, feel that honors our convictions.
You're not going to get an argument, Chris, you're not going to get an argument from me on voting your conscience at all. When I ask the question, can they win, it's a question of, is a vote for this ticket or that ticket or this person or that person essentially a shot in the dark? Because remember, politics is the art of the possible, not of the perfect. So far we've got Phil who says Governor Pataki would get his vote. Don wants Brown back. Roland would put together the ticket of Rick Santorum and Jim Talent. Ryan doesn't know. Chris doesn't know, but he is going to vote his conscience. I'm all for that. What about you? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Terry calls from her car. First female caller. Terry, who would you be voting for if the election were held today?
probably Newt Gingrich. After that would be Romney.
Okay, Mitt Romney. You got a problem with the fact that he's a Mormon?
No. I mean, Kennedy was a Catholic. Yeah.
Do you have a problem with the fact that he's only recently come to the pro-life and anti-gay marriage positions?
Maybe a little bit. You know, I mean, it depends. You know, sometimes people, when they do some, you know, digging and checking, they find out that maybe there's not, maybe they really are, you know, pro-life and I don't know.
All right, Terry, that's what Romney says. He says he did some digging and checking, and now he's pro-life. David calls from his car. Hi, David.
Hi, Todd. Just wanted to say I like your show, and I think I'd go with the Santorum and maybe put Tancredo in there. I'm not sure which I'd list first on the ticket, but I think we are committing national suicide at the southern border. And that's a big concern, as well as the pro-life issue.
All right, David, thank you very much. So another ticket would be Santorum Credo again. And I'm just pointing this out as a matter of fact, both of whom were defeated pretty soundly in the last election. Let me come back to this art of the possible thing. That's what politics is. Politics is not the church. There's a good distinction between church and state made in Scripture, Caesar and God. In the realm of Caesar, you do what you can. In the realm of God, God does the impossible. Now, God rules both realms, so he governs the elections ultimately. But when we go into the voting place, you know, I could come to the conclusion that I'm the best. Because I know my own conscience and my own positions better than anyone else's. I know my own mind. I could come to the conclusion that I am the best candidate for president. And I could write myself in every election. And what would it be? It would be, in that realm of the art of the possible, a wasted vote, because I'm not going to get elected. If I said I want to vote for myself because I'm the best candidate, I can trust myself, I know my positions, I'm going to vote for myself, you would look at me and say, why are you throwing your vote away? Vote for someone who actually has a chance. But we can talk more about this as we get closer to the elections. After all, it's 2 years away. Well, here's a guy I would vote for president with my eyes closed, if only because he bears such a striking resemblance to Teddy Roosevelt, one of my favorite presidents of all time, Pastor Matt Harrison. Yes, I would vote for him. I would vote for him to lead any institution, PTA, you name it. Find out more about what Pastor Matt Harrison and LCMS World Relief are doing worldwide. He actually has pictures of himself with President Bush and other dignitaries. Who knows? There in his office. You can visit our website, issuesetc.org, where they're extending the touch of mercy in a Christ-centered, cross-focused way, LCMS World Relief. You can also earmark a donation by calling them 1-888-930-4438, LCMS World Relief. Tomorrow we'll talk about the birth of John the Baptist foretold with Deaconess Pam Nielsen. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues Etc., please visit the audio archive section at kfuo.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM850 KFUO. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.